Couple years down the road, you go home.
McLean, Virginia.
The Hamlet.
Burnham would drive.
You go home because it's kind of a somber thing. The year was 2001.
Yeah.
You were on the cusp of graduating from high school. You're like, you can see the end, right? You're
Oh,
not like new to high school anymore, you know.
yeah.
You at least like got a little time under your belt. You feel a little more solidified as a teenager, right?
Solidified as a teenager?
Yeah.
Okay.
You've grown up a little bit, you
Sure.
know. The kids your age, everybody really starts to split off into smaller packs and they run with cliques, and
Yeah.
it's when you sort of start to define the adult you will ultimately become in a way that is like you're self-aware and you're making decisions, and those decisions have like real world implications.
Yeah.
You're spending money, you have independence. It's like it's a
Wow.
very it's a it's I mean it's your adolescence. It's the fucking best, you know. And there used to be a group of five of you. And it was again 2001. The
Who were the people?
towers had just fallen.
Oh my God. What the fuck?
In the wake of the greatest terrorist attack
Yeah.
ever to face this country, one of your best friends passed away.
In 9/11?
Yeah, he was at 9/11.
Oh my God, what
Yeah,
happened?
he was so
That's fucked up.
his name was Tony Scallop, and his dad was a longtime fishmonger, and was just had like always believed in like the sea will provide. That was like his dad's famous saying, right?
Like, he like went around saying that?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Like he was notorious for like not paying his bills, you know. Like he'd get work done on his truck, you know, and the guy's like, okay, it'll be $850. And he had like a bucket like from a fishing boat. That's where he kept all his money. And he would just dump it onto the table and it was like $38. And the guy's like, what are you doing? He just said, the sea will provide,
Oh my
and
God.
walked out. And everybody was crazy. So nobody wanted to fuck with him, right?
Sure.
So Tony Scallops kind of grew up like kind of hard scrabble, you know. He
Yeah.
was definitely like the least well off out of all of you guys. He was the last to get anything. You know, a lot of times it was
Sure.
a hand-me-down from one of you. You know, like
Oh, okay.
first cell phone he ever got was actually yours. That like you wanted to get a new phone and you were gonna get rid of the old one, you just gave it to him, right? Like clothes, you know. Mike Tinto sold this kid his dad sold him a car for like $800, you know, and let him pay it off over a year. Like
Oh wow,
the
okay.
community just kind of like took care of Tony because of his fucked up situation.
His dad was so is was such a piece of work that
Yeah, married to the
yeah.
sea, you know.
The sea.
Yeah, he was always out there fishing. That's what he did. You know, he'd take his little boat out in the morning, he'd fucking toss the net out there. He caught what you caught.
The seas of Northern Virginia.
Yeah, he'd find any body of water and fish it. You know,
Yeah.
say he'd fish a creek if it was deep enough.
What was his dad's
And then
name?
Torrance.
So Torrance and Torrance and Tony Scallops.
Yeah. Torrance.
All right.
Yeah.
So how did he die in 9/11?
So Torrance was such a piece of work that Tony really didn't have like super huge aspirations, you know? He the man that he admired most out of all men was the man who like manned the door at like a big business building downtown, like a security guard, like basically. He dressed in a suit and tie. He had a walkie-talkie on his hip.
Wow.
He gave off a sense of authority, of importance, of knowledge, of fortitude. And he long admired that man. You know, because he would go to like the bank or whatever with his dad. And, you know, that usually meant that, oh, they were going to have dinner that night. You know, it was like a good night.
Yeah.
You know, and the man smiled at little Tony throughout the years. And he always looked up to him because he never like judged him for being like lesser than, which he knew he was, you know.
Jeez.
So Tony one day wanted to be just like him. He wanted to be a security guard at a big business building in a bustling metropolis.
What was the deal with this security guard? Was like he worked there for a long time then? Like
Yeah. He was a real big deal in the security guard world.
What do you mean?
You know. From the years of 1997 to 2008, this guy, Sterling Cups, CUPPS, he won Business Associate of the Year, Midwest region. Even though he lived in Virginia, that's how good he was. He clearly swept like the Atlantic region, but he was so good that the people in the Midwestern region were like, look, it's just obvious, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta give it to Cups.
That's crazy. That is so fucking strange. All right.
So but because of that, Sterling didn't really pass the Mississippi much. Because the the mountain and Pacific didn't give him the same respect. So he would get up to the edge of Mississippi, he'd pull his fat fucking cock out, and he'd piss Jesus. Right into the river. And
wow.
He'd look at the other side, and he'd say, fuck you, suck this.
Oh, my God.
He'd spit in the river. He'd shake his fat dick off. And he put it away. And he vowed never to cross the river.
Did he
nobody,
ever?
Nope. Nobody crosses Sterling Cups. So Tony, like, wanted to be like Sterling Cups, you know?
All
so
right.
You know, he, you know, when he did a lot of research, this is early, you know, early in the internet when facts were as reliable as you believe them to be, you know, he did a lot of research and you know, found some online forums for security guards and recognizing the people who do the job. And he learned that the most decorated security guard of all time was the guy who was the security guard at the World Trade Center. And he was going to be leaving his post soon. His last day was 9/11/01.
Jeez.
Been on a job for 55 years. He just gotten over prostate cancer.
What's his name?
9/11/01 was his anniversary to his wife.
Oh my God.
He says, I'm retiring. I'm going from one wife to another. And all the boys would laugh.
What the fuck? What's this guy's name?
His name is Gene Skidmore.
He's the security guard of almost the security guard of 9/11. He's the security guard of
the World Trade Center.
The World Trade Center. Wow.
So okay. he shows up that day, right? He parks his fucking Lincoln in the same parking spot he's had for the last three decades. He's not getting any closer. Walks to the building with a pressed shirt, pressed pants, smile pressed on his face.
Yeah.
He clocks in. You know, the boys all give each other a couple of nut taps. Hey, it's his last day, right? Secretary gives him a big wet kiss he's been waiting on for years.
What?
He whistles Dixie and walks right out to the front, takes in that sweet, sweet New York air.
Yeah.
And he says, 9/11/01, it's the start of a new life.
Yikes.
Takes out one last Pall Mall.
Ugh.
He lights it up and he says, after today, no more.
Oh
He
no.
smokes in like two huge drags, tosses lungs out, puts it out. He never has another cigarette.
He smokes the entire cigarette in two puffs?
Yeah.
That is so
He
fucking
also,
crazy.
so he's like, he breathes out the cigarette. He quits smoking right then and there. And Tony
Wow.
Scallops walks up. And Tony Scallops walks up and he's got like a crisp white dress shirt. You know? And he looks him in the eye, he looks Gene in the eye, and he says, Officer Skidmore. And he loved it
Officer.
when people called him officer, right?
Yeah, I
And he
bet.
turned, he said, Yes, young man. He says, This is your shirt from when you worked overnight at AG Distribution from 1978 to 1982. Would you sign it for me? And he takes it from his hands and he looks at it. He goes, Yeah, this is from my slimmer days. He goes, I'm a shirt size up now. He goes, Don't tell my wife about it. He pulls a Sharpie from his pocket. He signs the shirt, tussles the little boy's hair, crouches down. He said, I've been waiting my whole career for somebody to recognize me. And it's finally, and then that fucking plane hits the building and everything crumples down on top of him.
Oh my God. I forgot it was 9/11.
It certainly was.
Fuck. God
Yeah, it
damn
definitely
it.
was.
He went there to honor his hero and he died and oh my
Yeah, Gene,
God.
Officer Gene Skidmore.
And also Tony Scallops.
Tony Scallops
Not good.
passes away. So
Yeah.
point being, it's the anniversary of his death. You come home. The thing you guys like to do was that you all lived in the hamlet, right? And there was a baseball diamond out there. And there weren't ever like enough people outside of like a significant summer gathering to like feel the real baseball game.
Yeah,
But
there was actually there was a baseball field at Spring Hill School right next to where I lived in the Hamlet. Yeah.
yeah, but you rarely had enough people to play a full game. So what the five of you
Sure.
would do is four of you would man an infield position and one of you would stand at home base and you'd practice hitting ground balls and they'd throw it around the horn. That was just what you guys did, you know?
So there's
But the
me, there's Tony Scallops, I think you said.
Scallops,
Who were the
you,
three
Tony
other?
Scallops,
Who were
the
the three
rest
other
of
front?
the swarm. Mike Tinto,
Holy shit!
Darwin Frank,
Wow.
and Stephen Willoughby. The three of them, plus you and Tony Scallops, were the original swarm.
The swarm.
Yeah. And so you used to play like all, you know, somebody played third, short, second, first, you know, and start on 9-12, 0-1. You just kind of consolidated into third, second, and first. And it just wasn't the same, you know. It just wasn't the, it was, it didn't feel the same without Tony Scallops there.
Yeah.
He had a slick glove, wasn't good with the bat, but he was fast. He played good defense, and you appreciated him, especially. You know, on the left side of that infield. So you go home, right? You go home and pull into your house. You got your bag in your hand. You go up to your parents' house. You open the door, right? You got your headphones on. You walk inside, you just kind of like listen to music. You turn the corner and you see your mom quickly hop off of the kitchen counter.
What?
And she goes, "Oh, Patrick, I'm so sorry. Yeah, welcome home." She fucking beat red. Dad's got his first button undone.
Ah.
And he goes, "Oh, hey, Patrick, didn't know you were gonna be here. Yeah, your room's clean upstairs. Why don't you go put your stuff away?"
I go, okay. And I just walk
Yeah.
upstairs and I just don't even, you know.
You take your first step
That
up the
sucks
stairs and
really bad, Aaron.
you just hear a giggle come from the other room.
Oh, God.
Right?
Oh, fuck. God damn it.
So you hang out there, right? You meet you meet your parents downstairs for dinner. You catch up, everything's good. You meet up with the guys at the swarm. You head over to this little place, the Narrows. It's just this little like sewer pipe, water pipe, culvert kind of place where kids go and hang out and smoke and tell tawdry tales. Boys go to be boys. You throw rocks at shit. It's your hangout spot.
Yeah.
So you meet the rest of the swarm down there and kind of catch up because, frankly, it's been a while, you know? Mike Tinto is running his dad's old business, Tinto's Tents. He does like repair work. He does tent work. You know, he's like a collision repair shop. Family business, been going for, man, it'll be 40 years this fall. He's really proud of it. Darwin Frank just kind of stuck around. He's like a local like amateur historian in a sense. He's like learned a
Of
lot about the town and like
really,
just kind of like loves the area and just like stuck around and just didn't ever leave. Works he's like a mechanic. On the weekends he'll like go out to the sites and like go hiking around and like looking at historical sites, like a deep
there's a
cut
lot of them.
local McLean history there.
Like what?
There's a place called Familiar Isle.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little there's like a body of water, like a lake just outside of McLean, Virginia. And it's kind of nondescript. It's like back off in the woods. It's not really accessible to the public. I mean, it's public land, but like nobody goes back there. It's just like forest, you know. But once you get through the thicket, you come upon this lake. It's beautiful, it's pristine, and in the middle of it is a small island. And a local legend has it that when you go there, you just have this intense feeling of deja vu.
Wow.
So yeah, he went out there one time. He said it all felt familiar to him, so was pretty cool. Stanley Willoughby, having a rough life.
Really?
He's having a bit of a midlife crisis. He and his wife are getting a divorce.
Oh.
Yeah, he's gotten into some hard drugs and
Really?
just like is just not in a, just not in a good place. He's angry and he's sad and he's lonely and
Wow.
he's
Yeah.
realizing that he's fucked up and now he's, close to 40 and fuck, what do I do now? It's that kind of thing, right? So this is kind of honestly like a good thing, like being around you guys. It's probably something that centers them a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you guys meet up, you have a great night, you go to an Applebee's, right? You get a unlimited riblet basket and fries,
Fuck yeah.
$15.99. They got $2 drafts on tap.
Unlimited
Like
riblets.
oh yeah, it's like an unlimited riblet deal. It's a Tuesday. Unlimited riblets, $15.99. They got a $2 domestic, like a
Wow.
fucking, I don't even know, just cheap ass beer on tap.
Cool. All right.
Bush Light.
Okay.
And you don't fucking care. And nobody does really. So you guys are there crushing some ribbies, having some beers, catching up on old times. You start to feel your age catching up with you. You realize that hey, you need to go home. You need to get some sleep. You had a long day. You traveled, right? You're gonna go home and you're gonna crash out early. Say your goodbye to the rest of the swarm. As you're leaving, you hear Stephen Willoughby go, "Hey, has somebody got me? I don't have any money."
Oh,
And
buddy.
you're just glad to get out of there. And Mike Tinto laughs and he's like, "Yeah, I got you."
All
He's a solid guy.
Yeah.
So you go back to your parents' house, right? Creep upstairs in the dead of night. Go into your room. You dress for bed. You fall asleep.
Yeah.
Sleep of the dead. You're just out. Deep sleep.
Cool.
It is. It's like the best feeling when you wake up from that and you're like, oh, fuck yeah. I just had a deep ass sleep.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think I actually do sleep more when I go back home, when I go back to Northern Virginia. I don't know why.
There's something about it.
Yeah.
You need sleep, deep sleep. You wake up in the middle of the night. You look out your window. You see the street lights in the hamlet. Take a sip from the glass of water on your little bedside table. A little bit of it runs down the side of your mouth. You think you're like still sleepy. So you're like, I really don't fucking care. You wipe it away.
Yeah, whatever.
Not a care in the world. You lay down. And you're closing your eyes to sleep. And you look right out that same window. And there's a face looking back at you.
Oof. Ooh.
It is a white, gaunt, ovular face, sunken in features. And it's surrounded by a flowing brown sort of cloak. And you can see that it's kind of like floating and hovering.
Ah. It's like Salem's Lot. Ah, man, I would be really, really upset. I think I would freak the fuck out. I think I would honestly probably dive back underneath the covers for a second, like a little kid, and then go back out again to see if I had just imagined it.
So you do that, you hide your little fucking face away from the world.
What?
And then you look back out from underneath the blanket, and the face is just staring right at you.
Oh my God. All right. Then I go, go away.
It just shakes its head. No.
What do you want?
Just stares at you.
Fucking shit. I take out, I guess I grab my phone and I record this.
You pull it up on your phone. It's not there. It doesn't appear on the phone, on the recording.
Oh, God damn it. Fucking shit. That is really not good. All right. I guess I look at it. I throw my hands up and I go, whatever, man. What do you want?
Just stares at you.
All right. I just go, all right, man. I don't know. I don't know what this is. I don't like it. I'm going to go back to bed.
So you go back to bed.
I also probably like put the curtains down.
So you walk over to it?
Yeah.
So you walk over to the window.
Oh, this is so scary.
You take like slow paces, right?
Yeah.
You can just feel your pulse all throughout your body.
Ugh.
And you reach out to like touch the curtains to close them. And when you touch it, it's almost like you're touching the robe and it just kind of like flies away.
Whoa.
And you look out, you don't see it. You don't see it anywhere.
I touch its robe?
Yeah, you just kind of get the feeling that you almost like you were touching its robe.
Wow.
When you grab the curtain.
That's
you don't see
up.
It anywhere. You're kind of standing there looking around.
Yeah. Right?
You go back to sleep. About an hour later, you wake up. He's kind of pissed, right? Nothing's in the window. You walk out, you look out, and across on the other side of the hamlet, you see it. You see it looking into a different window, and it's clearly floating off the ground.
Wow.
It's like looking into a second floor window.
Is it like standing upright, or is it like floating like Superman flies or something?
I mean, it's like standing upright, but it's like clearly floating.
Then I think I probably just run back to bed. That is so freaky.
And you look at it, you see it's moving from like window to window. It's like looking into all the houses. So you just go back to bed.
Fuck that. Not my problem.
So you go back to bed, right? Next day, you're hanging out with some friends. You know, you're going to go see a couple people. You're going to have dinner with the swarm to kind of talk about Tony Scallops and like what you're going to do.
Like, what do you mean what we're going to do? Like, oh, right. It's like a memoriam thing that we're doing.
Yeah. You're going to do the thing.
Well, what are we going to do?
Well, so you go, you know, you hang out and you go to Go to the Applebee's again. Again, all you can eat riblet baskets. It's Wednesday. That means they got trivia. They got $2 domestics on draft. That's what they do, right? If there's an excuse for them to give you all you can eat riblets, they're going to fucking do it. Why? Applebee's put out a commercial within the last year. It was their CEO. And he was like, hey, guys, Ted Fillington here, CEO of Applebee's.
Ted Fillington.
Yeah, and he stares in the camera. He goes, come here. He's like, get close. And the camera gets really close. And he goes, if I have an excuse, give you all you can eat riblets, $17.99 or less, I'm going to fucking do it. And then he pushed the cameraman back, and it was like $17.99, all you can eat riblets, right? And that's like their new thing, and it's bringing them in, making them grin.
I fucking bet. That's not a bad deal.
It really isn't. So you're all hanging out there, right? You tell the swarm about what you saw?
I don't know. I think I do, but I go, man, I would act like it was a dream that I had. Like, hey, I had this crazy dream last night.
And Mike Tinto goes, what was your dream? Takes a big fucking bite of a riblet.
Yeah.
He gets some extra sauce.
I tell him, like, yeah, I had a dream that there was this gaunt figure looking in the windows of the Hamlet, like, including mine.
You hear the distinct clink silverware. It crashes onto a plate.
What?
Darwin Frank looks up at you, and he goes, a gaunt figure?
Yeah.
And he kind of like leans forward. He goes, what happened?
Oh, I mean, nothing. He was nothing really. I mean, I tried to talk to it in the dream, and it just didn't really do anything. And when I touched the curtain,
he said, what did it look like?
I just gaunt figure, had like a flowing cloak or robe or something.
He looks at Mike Tinto. He goes, give me a pen. Mike's got like a lot of pens in his front pocket, you know? It's like,
why?
He's like, I'm a business owner. He's always got pens on him, you know? Okay. And so he gives one to Darwin, and you see Darwin like sketch something, and it's like a perfect recreation of the figure that you saw. He said, did it look like this?
Yeah. Holy shit.
And he's like, you're not fucking with me, are you? He goes, was it this? And he holds it up, and it is, you could lay it over the top of it. Be perfect.
Okay, then I tell him, look, man, I gotta be honest with you, I don't think it was a dream. I think it actually happened, and the fact that you're drawing this for me is freaking me the fuck out.
He's like, holy shit. He starts like freaking out himself. He stands up. He goes, hey guys, we gotta go, we gotta get out of here. And Steve Willoughby's like, but I'm only two plates in, you know. And Darwin's like, yeah, but I'm paying for it, let's get the fuck out of here.
All right,
so Steve like asked him to order it, to package everybody's stuff to go. He's gonna take it with him. And he's like, you guys don't mind, do you? And everybody knows where Steve's at in life. So you're like,
sure,
yeah,
whatever. You know. Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. So
poor you guys go guy.
You guys go back to Darwin's place. Again, it's a small apartment. Just kind of you know, not right at the Hamlet, but like kind of close. And you walk in, and it's just like stacked with books, you know, there's books everywhere. And he looks over and he starts like rifling through some things. And he talks about reading that there was a specter in this area that had thought to have been a curse on children for hundreds of years. And wow. There he finds like this book that's like, looks like it's at least 200 years old. You know, it's leather bound. It's very fragile looking. And there's like a picture of this exact thing. Like an artist's illustration of this whole thing. And you see him like rip the pages out of this very expensive, very rare book. And he goes into his kitchen cabinet and he starts grabbing stuff. And he's like, he's like kind of explaining to you. He's like, there's this thing. And then these kids kept dying, and you know, they think they trapped this thing, but they let it out. He goes, and they've been looking for it for so long. And he's like, it's a curse. It's a curse. And he's just like screaming. He's like freaking the fuck out.
Yeah. I would try to get him to calm down. I would probably, yeah, I would just go like, hey man, like, let's just, take 2 seconds. Let's all sit down. Just drink some water and let's just calm down for a minute. I don't know what you're talking about.
He goes, we got to go. We got to go right now.
Can you just tell me? I don't understand what this is.
He goes, I'll tell you on the way.
Okay.
So you all get into, Mike Tinto's Ford Excursion. It is so fucking dark in the back. Like you can't see anything.
Yeah.
Right. It's just so tinted all the way through. Illegally so, but he hooks up the cops and they look the other way. You know how things work in a place like that.
In a place like McLean, Virginia.
Yeah. So you guys get in, right? You take off. You hear like the clang of metal in the bag. In the back seat behind you, there's a bag with a bat, some balls, some gloves, and you guys were all going to go play baseball one more time. You know, without Tony Scallops, just talk about your friendship that you had with Tony. That's like the big plan, you know. So Darwin basically is telling you like the history of this apparition, and I'm telling you that it's when it is seen, it's always been a precursor to something befalling the people of its realm, of its immediate area. So he's like, so we have to get this thing or bad shit is going to happen to everyone in the hamlet.
What is it called?
It's called, Paul the Wanderer. And,
Paul the Wanderer.
Yeah.
Legendary figure of McLean, Virginia. Of the hamlet, yeah. Specifically.
Well, this okay. Time, you know. And so that's the thing. He starts telling you about all of these other neighborhoods or locations within the greater McLean area that were once like thriving and bustling and had like a good situation with good people. And then Paul the Wanderer arrived and things went to shit after that.
Holy shit.
So you guys go back, right? You go back to your home, right?
Well, what's our plan? What are we supposed to?
So in this book that Darwin has there,
yeah,
there's a spell to entrap this thing.
Holy shit.
You have to lure it to a place, and it's old Wiccan magic kind of shit. You know, it's like one of those like a frontiersman's guide to trapping a ghoul, that kind of a thing. And it's like all shit that you just had around back then, you know. It's a walnut's worth of butter, you know, like that's like the measurement, you know. It's just like a fucking weird old wives' tale thing.
Okay.
So he's got like all these fucking ingredients and shit in his arms. He's walking around. He's like picking flowers and shit. You know, he's just finding things in nature that are going to help contribute to this. He walks into your parents' spacious backyard. There's a trampoline back there. They didn't always have one. They got one recently.
We had another one. We had one growing up.
Yeah, there's two of them back there.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them is for you guys. The other one's for them. So,
all right.
Darwin goes to get on your parents' trampoline. You're like, hey, you can't. You just got to use the other one. And he's like, why can't I use this one? And you're like, you just have to. Believe me. He's like, why not? And you're like, it takes like several minutes for you to convince him without telling him exactly what you think is happening.
Yeah. But
eventually he moves to the other trampoline. He uses all these ingredients and he lays out like a big circle within this thing. And he slowly reads this like incantation from this book that's hundreds of years old. And you feel like the wind kick up, right? Mike Tinto drops the bag with the bats on the ground and you hear the clang, clang, clang. You all grab like a bat and like prepare to hurt this thing.
Yeah.
The sky turns a little bit dark. Even Willoughby has like a riblet in his mouth.
He's still eating?
Oh, yeah. He got all the leftovers.
Sure.
He wipes his barbecue sauce on his shirt. Grabs the bat. Darwin's voice gets louder and louder. Deeper and deeper. He starts speaking in like a almost like in tongues, right? And his language gets faster. And you see this thing sort of come into being right in the middle of this circle on your trampoline. What do you do?
I guess I don't even wait for it to do anything. I go for its head with the bat.
You go to swing the bat and you pull it all the way back, and then it goes way. Don't hit me,
Paul the Wanderer.
Yeah.
Okay, then I don't. I go, what the fuck? I go, explain yourself.
He says, I'm just looking for friends. I play baseball too.
Why does he talk like that?
It's just how he talks. I don't know.
And then I guess I look at Darwin and I go, what? Also, what is Darwin getting into that he knows like all these like magic incantations?
He's just a guy who never left town and got into whatever he's gotten into, you know? More questions than answers, really.
I guess. I guess I look at Darwin and I go, what the hell is going on?
Darwin is just kind of like mumbling to himself, like sort of, you get the impression that he's like holding this thing in place, using whatever energy he has to hold it in place. He's rock hard.
Okay, then I turn back to Paul the Wanderer and I go, what? I ask him, like, what's going on?
I'm just looking for friends.
Like, he talks like Barney, kind of.
I mean, I guess it's a pretty accurate impression, I think.
All right, so I go, all right, man.
You can see him kind of smile at you.
Okay. I mean, we can be your friend, I guess. We'll be your friend.
He goes, let's play baseball.
Okay. I look over at what's his name? At Darwin, and I go, release him. Let's play some ball.
Darwin's hands fall to his side.
Yeah.
He just kind of breathes heavily. Still very erect.
Holy shit, dude.
And you guys like all notice it. And he notices that you notice it, and he's like, sorry, it's just what happens.
Okay.
It's not like thing.
All right. You have a very strange life, Darwin.
Darwin looks at Paul the Wanderer and he goes, you know how to play short? And Paul goes, yup. So you, Mike Tinto, Darwin Frank, Stanley Willoughby, and Paul the Wanderer all go to the baseball diamond.
Yeah.
You click the lights on. They come on overhead. Takes him a minute to turn on, and you're standing there at home plate. You're looking out at all three of your friends and Paul the Wanderer, man in shortstop. And it makes you miss Tony Scallops all the more, but it makes you very thankful that you have this moment with your friends, and it really puts a lot of things into perspective.
Yeah. Is Paul any
good? Hit a ball right at third base. That's where Mike Tinto is standing. Paul the Wanderer charges, and Mike Tinto makes the play. The wind picks up. Paul's gown sort of flutters in the wind, and then he just eats Mike Tinto whole, and then he eats the same to you. He does the same to Stanley Willoughby, and then to Darwin Frank, and he eats you, and then he eats all of the children of the hamlet.
What the fuck?
You guys like made like friends. You didn't question anything. You just believe this thing. It was going to be your buddy. You were so desperate to fill a hole that you never filled over the last however many years that you just filled it with a demon that was documented as having gone around and consumed kids and hit a haul on different neighborhoods all across the greater McLean area. You fucking did it immediately.
I guess we didn't really think about it. Oh, fuck.
He was terrifying, and he was going house to house.
Maybe we had the wrong idea, but it turns out we had the exact right idea.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck. He ate every child under 13 and under in the hamlet.
Ah.
Within 10 years, nobody lives there because they're afraid of what will happen to children. They eventually bulldoze it. They build a Bass Pro Shop that's home to the largest mass shooting in the history of the United States. 2032.
What a bummer.
Yeah. So many people died.
Oh, man.